It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since the start of the pandemic, deaths by domestic violence in Wisconsin have surged to record levels. Domestic violence claimed 80 lives last year. That includes victims and perpetrators. There were 68 lives lost in the first year of the pandemic. That's from the Wisconsin Domestic Violence Homicide Report compiled by End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Join in on prevention, on intervention, services that help in your community, 800-642-1234. Carmen Petrie is president and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. Carmen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Well, why is the rate of domestic violence increasing and worsening?
You know, the homicide rate was going up before COVID. We noted in the summer of 2019 a significant beginning to increase of homicide. I think all of the indicators that need to be present for people to feel safe to move forward, you know, have gotten worse. People are afraid, they're isolated, they're locked down during COVID. And if you don't know what your future is going to be, it's hard to leave. If you don't know how you're going to feed yourself or make a living or support yourself. So I think the isolation of COVID and the lockdown and the uncertainty about the future has been very, very difficult and increased the homicides that we've been seeing during the pandemic.
Before the pandemic, Black women were already more likely than other women to be killed by their partners. And support advocates have been writing this month, and I saw in the MIT Technology Review that said the pandemic created a perfect storm for Black women at risk of domestic violence. What have you seen?
Absolutely. I totally support that and agree with that. We have seen more Black and brown women killed and who are at risk because of those complicating factors. There's a distrust and a decision that Black and brown women have to make when they come forward around engaging with systems that they don't feel connected to or are distrustful of. So that's great difficulty. I think we get there too late in our society, which means when we need public safety, there's already been, you know, many, many opportunities for doors to be open for survivors and families. Black women are more likely to be living in poverty, which makes it more difficult to come forward. So there are significant barriers for Black and brown women.
Let's turn to the economy. How does the economy and inflation complicate intimate partner violence?
You know, I get asked often, does poverty cause violence? And my answer is always, no, it doesn't. It creates complications that make it harder to move forward. If you're isolated and you're thinking about, you know, I've never had a job or I'm underemployed or I'm working too many jobs, I don't have childcare, can barely make my rent, I can't pay for food, and I need this person, it's going to be very hard for you to move forward if you're dependent in those ways on the person who's hurting you. So, you know, the economy is it can be very difficult for survivors, and it causes lots of fear. You know, if I said to you, I need you to leave your home today, but I don't tell you where you're going to lay your head or how you're going to feed yourself or your kids, that's a very daunting, fearful state to be in. We don't make leaving easy.
Mm. We're looking at the rise in domestic violence deaths in Milwaukee and elsewhere with Carmen Petrie. Carmen is president and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Carmen, your organization was one of two groups that commissioned this study that is looking at the economic impact of domestic violence, the ripple effect across right. Wisconsin. Why examine this issue through an economic lens?
You know, when we built the Family Peace Center years ago, we've been in the Family Peace Center for 6 years. We knew we wanted to start a conversation. We listened to the things that people are talking about in our communities and their education, public safety. And we felt like economic development, we felt like we wanted to help connect this issue to those broader issues that people are talking about, thinking about, because Violence in our home undermines any indicator we want to move forward in our communities. So we thought by, you know, publishing this report, which are conservative estimates, we thought by publishing this, we could get a robust conversation going about, you know, what could we be doing in our communities to redirect some of this investment towards prevention, which is our primary recommendation. There are three in the report, but, you know, we need to be focusing on prevention, working in our schools, our churches, our community-based organizations to open doors and provide healing opportunities for people who've been exposed to violence.
Your study found domestic violence can cost Wisconsin $657 million a year, as more than 94,000 people experienced intimate partner violence statewide last year. What do you want policymakers to take away from those numbers?
I want them to take away the unintended costs that, you know, first of all, I would say there's no way to quantify the human loss, right? The families and the people that are living without love and connection and relationship. That is the biggest toll. And there's no way to quantify that. And that's a forever change in their life they'll be living with. But I want policymakers to be thinking about how can we move our efforts upstream instead of just being anchored downstream in supervision or crisis work. You know, we all do really important work downstream, but it's a missed opportunity to not have robust efforts in our schools, be funding, you know, churches to come forward, medical settings to be doing this work. And I think the best scenario is public and private dollars combined to move us upstream.
Right, because if you have schools and churches and medical settings all contributing to this mm-hmm. effort, you need something that binds it all together and a lot of collaboration that would probably mean budget dollars. How can the state budget reduce domestic violence and get in the areas that you feel could really help this issue?
I think we already see efforts moving in that direction. I know the city of Milwaukee just gave funding to the We Are Here Milwaukee Collaborative. Each of those organizations got $100,000. Smaller organizations tend to be underfunded. You know, we have a different problem at Sojourner. You know, we have a $7 million budget and we raised $4 million privately. So this combination of public and private dollars is really critical. The governor just gave Sojourner $1 million for our high-risk work. Almost all of that money is going to our partners. That's a partnership between the District Attorney's Office, Department of Corrections, Milwaukee Police Department, and Sojourner. So I think we're taking a turn. We need more investment. We also need policies that encourage our schools, our churches, our community-based organizations, support them, listen to them about what's happening street by street in our communities. And what are those answers at that level that could be supported? Some of it's funding, some of it is policy change, some of it is using your influence to bring people together for conversation.
Carmen Petrie, CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center, supporting domestic violence survivors in Milwaukee. Join in on the role of community-based solutions, as Carmen has been talking about, what you think would make a difference in prevention, intervention, support systems, community programs you're a part of. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Domestic violence, it costs the state of Wisconsin more than $657 million annually in physical and mental health care, court costs, policing and prisons, shelter, lost productivity at work, and more. That economic data published in a new report this month from the Jamie Kimball Foundation for Courage in partnership with Sojourner Family Peace Center. Join in on the impact of domestic violence on your city, your community. What needs to change? 800-642-1234. And Carmen Petrie is here, leads Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee, stays with us. Carmen, you mentioned this briefly, but Milwaukee County's domestic violence high risk team. So this includes your group and the local DA's office, nearby law enforcement, and you're really focusing on ending domestic violence homicides in the city. How is this team doing as it marks its 5-year anniversary?
You know, the team is very effective. 30 years ago, we did not have the technology or process for understanding who would be the person who would commit that homicide. We now do something called the LAP protocol, the Lethality Assessment Protocol, which we began to implement statewide with Milwaukee in the lead, I believe in 2016. And the team was convened in 2017 in February because there had been a homicide. We had been waiting for funding. There's no additional funding for any of the partners to do this work. So we know it's very effective. In the 5 years, they've only lost one life to domestic violence homicide. Now, it doesn't mean that that we're not in a state of emergency and things are not difficult. It just means that this model of working in partnership with these primary partners and others, the only role of that team is to prevent that homicide from happening. So we know this works, and we know that this is the future direction of our work at Sojourner.
It sounds like the speed at which they can move and get things done is having a positive impact. What is it about that this team that works so well?
Well, they meet twice a week. We, with the governor's funding, they're going to be meeting every single day to review high-risk cases. High-risk cases can evolve or escalate very quickly. We do things like buy safety systems for survivors, relocate survivors, charge the case with additional charges, put someone into witness protection. You know, each partner has a specific role. The Department of Correction, if the person's on supervision, can pull the person into custody. So they look at every opportunity to hold that person accountable and prevent them from committing that homicide. Now, that is, you know, on the back end of the work. I would much rather be talking to someone who's about to have a child about their hopes and wishes for their child or their children in an OBGYN setting to both parents about, you know, how do they heal themselves and create the life they want for their child long before we have to use public safety to, you know, contain or hold somebody accountable. So that's kind of the upstream downstream analogy.
I want to ask about firearms, because if an abusive intimate partner has access to firearms, thinking about last year's data, firearms were the weapons used in 67% of domestic violence homicide incidents in Wisconsin. How does this high-risk team deal with guns?
You know, we are looking for guns, trying to prevent. I think most of the team focuses on containing and holding the person accountable. There's lots of challenges with guns. If there's a gun present in a situation, it increases, research says, the risk of homicide by 500%.
500%.
So there is way too much access to guns in our culture overall. A gun involved in a high-risk situation makes the situation much more difficult. So you're looking at gun surrender, you know, picking up the guns. It's a combination of accountability and safety and preventing the person from access to the person they want to hurt. So gun and guns and access to guns are a critical part of the conversation. The other thing that we're extremely worried about, which we don't talk a lot about, is strangulation and how significant that is and how deadly and lethal that is. So guns are right up there in risk factors, strangulation, unemployment for the person committing the harm. All are risk factors that can make it more likely that you'll be murdered.
I'm thinking about the Milwaukee County's domestic violence high-risk team meeting daily, and the just the workload and the staffing that has to come together. Are staffing levels a concern on this program?
Absolutely. There's not enough staffing. That's the reason why we couldn't scale up during the pandemic. The team, you know, we've used existing resources in the Milwaukee Police Department, DOC, and the District Attorney's Office, and Sojourner. There were no additional funds, but there was that homicide that happened so quickly, we couldn't get our arms around the case. So started meeting in early 17. The funding from the governor will be allocated to each of the partners in strategic ways. They're meeting right now, and I want the team to figure out how to move every day. Someone on that team will have their eyes on high-risk cases every day. And then we're going to combine that work with, you know, we've been working with police in the district since 2006. We're going to be moving some of that work to on-scene response. So it's not just one piece, it's an overall piece. It's one piece of a strategy, getting there to the scene more quickly to talk with survivors right away, building the case appropriately from within the system. And then, you know, we're looking at bringing a forensic nurse on site with us so they can begin to do a medical assessment of the injuries on the scene and then, you know, begin to build trust and rapport. We provide confidential services, so we don't divulge any information that a survivor does not want us to.
We're talking about the rise in domestic violence deaths in Milwaukee and Wisconsin with Carmen Petrie. Carmen is president and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. You can join in the conversation on intimate partner violence. What is working in your community and where you see it headed? 800-642-1234. Carmen, I find that really interesting that you have the forensic nurse on site as part of the team and not having the survivor go to a medical facility. What impact does that have?
Well, we're starting the pilot, we hope, in a couple of weeks. And the idea of bringing a forensic nurse to help with assessing, in particular around strangulation, it's a new idea, and it's one we're going to be piloting. We're starting in one district, and we're going to look at the pros and cons, what's working. So we're going to be having an advocate, an officer, forensic nurse, and a district attorney after the scene's been secured to come out. We're in the process of writing the MOUs and defining our roles. But I think the value of having a nurse, I think a medical professional speaks to you differently. It's the same as when an advocate who's confidential speaks to you. You know that there's privacy and confidentiality there. And I think there's power in conversations with medical professionals who are really, I think most of us think about the medical profession as helping us with healing and moving towards healing, I hope. And so it's just a different perspective on how to have the conversation at the scene. You know, we're also going to be looking at expanding in other ways. There's other groups that are working as well with on-scene response. There's a violence interrupters through the Office of Violence Prevention. I think we have to be doing whatever we can to create trust, rapport, and move ourselves closer to community, because that's where I think the answer is.
And as you mentioned, all of these systems at work, the cross collaboration and communication to ensure everyone's working together and knows what the other pieces are doing, I imagine that too can be a challenge.
Absolutely. There's a ton of communication that has to happen. You know, the core of how violence happens in our communities for individuals is isolation. Violence flourishes in isolation. So the more we can communicate, break down barriers, open doors and let survivors know they're not alone and that we're here to help them and it's not their fault. You know, I think that's at the core of all of the work that all of the organizations are doing to try to address this crisis.
We only have a few seconds left, but Carmen, will these numbers come back down or do you see this as a real upward trajectory?
I think we will probably continue to be in an upward trajectory. I think we're still dealing with the chaos that COVID created. I think there's three things coming out of COVID: extreme isolation, housing insecurity, food insecurity, and mental health issues. And so we've got to figure out how to address those and give more access to people where they're living to services that are meaningful. I think so for a while, we'll see it continue to increase. And then eventually, I believe we'll be able to create the strategies needed to bring it down.
Okay.
But the answer, as I said, I think is within the community, within the hearts of people who are living in this this tragedy.
Carmen, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Carmen Petrie, President and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. If you or someone you know needs help, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.